Hello, listeners. Welcome to Educational Landscapes, Lessons from Leaders. On today's episode, we are going to learn from Rachel Corbett. Welcome to the show, Rachel.
Good afternoon. Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, people are listening from all over, so that was probably accurate, to have different time zones covered. Thank you for joining us. So, to get us going, what is your educational leadership title or titles?
So my current title is Associate Director of Academic Programs.
Wonderful. And what do you do in your role?
Where I currently sit at the School of Public Health, the Rollins School of Public Health, in the Behavioral Social Health Education Sciences Department. And one of my main functions is to serve as an academic advisor for prospective students and current students in the program. So that consists of meeting, of course, with prospective students and attending recruitment events, also hosting admissions sessions and being available for student visits and questions from students about admissions application process. But that also includes me serving as somewhat of a liaison between students and their supports or students and faculty. Also kind of serve as a person that liaises for a student crisis or extenuating circumstances, whether that's between myself and the Office of Student Engagement, offered our Enrollment Services Department. Also collaborate with other departments in my role. So I work with closely with Career Services to ensure that the students that are coming into the Masters of Public Health program in our department are actually receiving the resources that they need. A huge wellness advocate too. So I also lead and direct a peer mentoring program for the first and second year students in the department. This was something that was established in the first, I think in the first year of my role here,
Nice.
in response to student demands. So a little bit of everything. I serve as a hub of support for students in the department, working really closely with my colleague, who is also she's an assistant director of academic programs, and then the director of graduate studies, who is also a graduate of the department and the program. So I'm a part of that team, and I do all the things in terms of student support, student concerns, academic support for students.
Oh, I love that. As I was listening and thinking about all the things you do, I was like, you are a hub and a student champion all in one. It's amazing.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely that's I guess what I think of myself as a tour guide or someone that's helping the students navigate that space. Because you have all the knowledge connected to the various departments that you work with to make sure the student is supported through their matriculation and then even beyond that in alumni services too. So
Oh, so you get to see them through their full life cycle, while, from when they're
yeah.
thinking about it to when they come out and become alumni. Wow.
It's a very, very gratifying experience to see them before they even start, to see them grow through whatever challenges they experience. And then to even see them doing the work that they're doing while they're in the program is really it's very, very gratifying because you hear them talk about what they aspire to do, and they're like, wow, you actually made these things happen. And the resources that are placed around them at Rollins really helps that experience too. So it's definitely a gratifying experience to see them from beginning to end.
Oh, wonderful. I'm now curious how many, like typically in a cohort, how many end up like matriculating in each year?
So the largest cohort that we have seen included an incoming class of 125 students. And that was a mixture of dual degree students who are coming in for the Master's of Public Health and maybe also completing their MD or completing a master's in business administration or nursing or theology. And I think that was the class of 2021. But typically we have about, I'd say 80 to 100 students in any given cohort, in the years that I've been here. Anyway, that's about an average.
My mind is blown trying to track that many students through their cycles.
It's crazy to think about. I've had the chance to graduate about four cohorts.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's been, yeah, it's really gratifying to see that process. And I also think about how, in terms of public health and what they're going to school for, they're really passionate, and they're actually resolving problems and creating solutions. And it's just really amazing to see. So yeah.
Amazing indeed. And so now I wonder, as we've talked about you being a tour guide, navigator, champion, hub, what skills do you use in order to get all of this work done in your role?
A lot of active listening, in terms of my role is really student-centered. So listening to students, what are they looking for? What are they seeking in terms of like furthering their education? Active listening with my colleagues as well, because I work on teams, we collaborate across teams to support students as they come in and complete these programs. So definitely a team player, an active listener. I have a master's in counseling, so truly a comprehensive approach to addressing student concerns, and making sure that the student doesn't feel like they're just a student, because I think I see beyond that, and I kind of understand that life is still happening as they attend school. Program development and implementation skills. The peer mentoring program in the department was given to me as a project when I started my role in the spring of 2020, and then we introduced the first cohort that fall. So seeing the development and the evolution of that has been really nice to see when you think of what program development is and what it looks like to implement a program. Coaching skills, helping students kind of get past whatever hurdles they might be experiencing. Again, serving as a liaison and connecting them with resources that are really useful for them as they experience whatever transitions they're going to experience. Kind of, I feel like an advocate, student advocacy in terms of especially their wellness. I think that kind of wraps it up. Problem solving. I hope that wraps it up. I feel like I'm kind of rambling now, but yeah, that kind of wraps up what I feel like are skills that I really use.
Those are very important skills. And I love that, sometimes people end up in roles and they're like, oh, I got this degree and don't really use it. But you definitely use your master's in counseling in order to do the work you do, which is amazing. And so as I think about that, I recognize you didn't just start off in this role. So what was your journey that led to this current role?
I think it was unique. I don't know what other people's stories sound like, but I was a first generation college kid. I went to school thinking I was going to be a doctor and realized that science was the hard sciences was not my best friend. So I explored sociology. It's something I fell in love with, and then I finished my bachelor's and started working in retail, and then a suggestion from a friend was to look at an opportunity at a career college. So I looked at a job, and I started working as a re-entry enrollment specialist, where I work with prospective students, but also students who maybe had to stop going to school, and they encountered some life situations. So I would help them kind of resolve some of those basic issues and realign themselves with whatever path they came in, or maybe even a new one. So that was my first, that was in 2012, my first role in higher ed, I would say. And I think that really helped me figure out what my niche was, because I always wanted to be in a role where I was going to be helping people, but I didn't know what that helping looked like. So in 2012, or 2013, I decided to go back to school for counseling, and I thought, well, I'll go get a license and be a counselor to help people, right? But I realized when I was completing my master's that the students that I was serving in these different roles could definitely benefit from having someone who was a wellness advocate, or someone who could see past just their position or status as a student to help them kind of navigate some of the challenges they were experiencing. And so with that, I was like, I'm not going to get licensed. I'm going to stay in higher ed. Because I think I, again, as a first generation student, kind of seeing myself in many of these students, I developed a comprehensive approach to helping students navigate these spaces. So not just what classes do you need to take, but how are you doing? What does life look like outside of the classroom for you? Is there anything that I could provide that might support you and you being a whole person? So decided not to get my license. And then after that, I developed like this workshop called Self-Awareness Matters. Also established a business a few years ago where I've developed some workshops centered around wellness education. And now I'm here 12 years later working at Rollins. And I think that's kind of how I got here. I've been in a lot of different roles. Where I've worked as like a retention specialist, kind of looking at student academic progress and, what kind of challenges they're experiencing, to now kind of marrying all those things in my current role, with admissions, engagement and recruitment engagement, but also on the wellness side, like making sure that I have a positive impact on the student experience, which has really culminated in the development of this peer mentoring program. And that's kind of been my like, it's been my baby, I guess, because I've stretched and I've grown, in that role as a program developer, a program implementator. But yeah, I think that would wrap it up in terms of how I got to where I am and why I'm still working in higher education.
Oh, I love that journey. And as somebody who also, not that I wanted to be a doctor, but started with the heart, like all three sciences, and quickly learned, this is not for me.
Not
I
for me.
fully appreciate that realization along the way. And then it's like, pivot, pivot, where are we pivoting? And what I love about listening to your story is how there was a clear, like, line of always thinking about the whole person and wellness throughout every type of role that you've had, which is amazing. I think some people it takes time for them to work out like their niche, their passion, their purpose, but you found that along the way and it's really stayed as a, yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. So I wonder then, what do you wish you knew before stepping into like your current role?
What do I wish I knew? I think so. I would say when I got here in 2020, fall, no, spring, I started in March of 2020. And honestly, since I've been here, I didn't realize like how much support was actually around in these roles. Because when you become an academic advisor or like an education professional who's not a professor or is not doing research, so to speak, it's hard to find your way or stretch out in the roles. But I found that at Rollins, when you have other interests or there are things that that may not always be a part of your role and you're interested in doing those things, like I've been encouraged to do presentations and things at conferences. I think, actually reaching out for professional development and things earlier on would have probably impacted me even better. But I think those things, like being mindful of the resources that are aware, and also kind of leaning into what networking really is. I think I've been fortunate that I kind of started my career in higher education. I was in my early 20s, and yeah, I was in my early 20s. So I had a unique it position where like I just had this same experience that some of these students are coming through to have. And so I understand it and I see it a little bit differently and can relate to those challenges and speak of my challenges as a way to kind of help them navigate that space too. But yeah, I think one thing that I would have benefited from is knowing that there are professional development opportunities available for people like myself who maybe have a wellness-centered approach to what they're doing in student services or student-facing services. But yeah, like networking is important. Connecting with people who do the same things that you do is really important. But yeah, I think those would be the things, like leaning into that network at work, So that they can share opportunities with you and things that might enrich your experience even more beyond just the service you provide for students, faculty, or whoever is in that space that you work in.
Yeah, so important. And thinking about the networking and professional development, I'm wondering, like in, currently, what continuing professional development do you do to keep up with the needs of your role?
So our department and the larger what they call the student leadership team at Rollins does a great job of creating opportunities for that. So just alone in the BSHES department, Behavioral Social Health Education Sciences department, there we've been completing an organizational development series through Emory. I don't know what the larger title is, but that's something that the department kind of advocated for staff. And so I've been engaged with that. I also connected since I started. A lot of my role with the mentoring program involves me connecting students to alumni. So years ago, I connected with Black Health. I'm not sure if you're aware of who Black Health is, a nonprofit organization.
Well, but yes, tell more, because our listeners may not be aware.
Yeah, so Black Health is a nonprofit organization, public health centered. They have some really, really great campaigns established with Advil and I think it's Cottonelle. But again, the goal is to educate people about racism and how racism impacts the public health of all people. But really, when I connected with that organization, I just fell in love with the work that they're doing. I thought it was really profound that they were all graduates. The founders of this organization were all graduates of the Rollins MPH program. So three from the HPM department and then one from the department I'm currently working in. And by way of me kind of organizing events, I met the founders and we collaborated with them recently to host an anti-racism training in our department. So that's something that's happening this March, actually in a few weeks. So yeah, just think so constantly finding ways to introduce things like that, not just for myself, but for my colleagues and the people around me. When I also had the opportunity to present at the ASPPH conference last year, and that's the Association of Schools and Public Health Programs. And this is because I had, so of course, my colleagues recognized the work I was doing with the mentoring program. It was like, Rachel, why don't you share this information? Why don't you write the proposal, submit it, and see if it gets accepted? And it did. And it was just, I was like, oh, wow, I've never done this before. But I had been doing this work with this mentoring program. And I finally had an opportunity to go present to colleagues from across the United States, some from outside of this space, who were doing similar work and looking for opportunities to connect on things like this. So that was definitely a professional development opportunity I'd never explored before, but it was because my colleagues and people around me had shared those opportunities with me, and I now seek them as a result of some of the connections that I've made here pretty regularly. So yeah, anything, honestly, trainings that are offered through the department, through larger Emory space, I try as much as I can to engage and just learn more through even through my own reading and independent research. So yeah, and I think also students provide like an informal professional development for me. Like I learn so much from them from the work that they're doing in public health, and it also informs the decision that I make for the mentoring program and the things that I do with recruitment and how I approach students. So yeah, it's really cyclical. And I found that again, Rollins has a rich, rich network of opportunities to engage with to continue learning. So yeah.
That is amazing. And I hear you. There is so much we can learn from our learners,
Say.
their perspectives on things, that where they're at. There's so much we can learn from them. So thank you for sharing that.
Thank you.
What advice would you give to someone interested in doing the same type of leadership roles that you've had?
I would say really again, lean into the people around you or people that you know doing similar work. Because my I feel like I didn't know that this was a career path that was available. Despite me knowing, knowing academic advisors that I worked with for myself, think about again, you if you want to impact people, what does that look like in terms of impacting people? What people do you want to impact? Do you want to work with students? Because I think, when you think about students, you think about K through 12. In many cases, you don't think about higher education, but even more so, like associate deans and people who work in roles that really, really enrich and impact the student experience play a very important role outside of the faculty at institutions of higher education. So I would say do your research and think about program coordinators and do research about what type of skills they need. Counseling, I feel like, kind of propelled me for something I didn't know I was going to be doing. I truly thought I was going to be a licensed therapist, but I know that those skills were aligned with the work that I'm doing. There have been countless times where students come to me and vent or just share just because that I've created a safe space. Again, this is a part of the counseling training and development where you first of all get comfortable with yourself and kind of remove or not even remove, but really reflect and get to know your own biases and things. And it makes you recognize that people are just people. And we all deserve a safe space, especially when we're experiencing transition that will impact our lives for a long time. You think about your educational experiences, you want them to be enriching and encouraging despite them being challenging. So that's what I would say. Like, think about counseling. Think about opportunities to shadow people like myself, like the staff who don't, we're not really thought about in terms of a professional role sometimes, but it is a rewarding role, getting to work with students. But yeah, I think that's the advice I would give. Don't think if you want to work in an educational space, don't think just about K through 12 or about being a faculty member, but think about those supportive roles that could that also enrich the student experience.
Oh, that is so important. I think about and you're so right. There's so many professional staff that when I think back, some of them didn't even have the title of academic advisor, but they served that kind of role as I sat in their office. It's like, yes, you may be the admin staff for this department, but you're the one who has to listen to our students like have meltdowns and all of that. And so I definitely resonate with what you're saying, that there are these amazing helpers in our professional staff who if you're not a student or you're not like aware of all that encompasses what they do, you miss out on really appreciating all that goes into the work they do.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. So, I want you to kind of now we're going to start reflecting a little bit more, and going broader. So, I would love to hear from you. How do you support or expand education in your profession or through your role?
Through my role. How do I support or expand? I would say, so in my current role, as the lead of the peer mentoring program, I also serve as supervisors to two grad assistants. And I've had this is my first time truly supervising like anyone, honestly. And that experience, I think, in terms of like them learning or me guiding how they learn about program development. And program implementation has been kind of powerful when I think about what they're learning. Like they take classes on community assessment and program development for public health concerns and issues. So with the mentoring program, it's been great to see how with it being so focused on like wellness in terms of making sure that first generation students have a not a specific experience, but that they found community. or that student underrepresented students find community. I think it's powerful that we've kind of stretched out in the department and have used this program to show what students are capable of, because I truly do learn from the grad assistants. In my own, like, I ask them for feedback all the time in terms of how I'm supervising and what are the things that students are looking for, and how do we use things that have already been established maybe at other institutions to really influence how we develop the things here too. So I would say there, I think even me just going to the conference and presenting on the material that I presented, I had a lot of colleagues who walked up and just asked, like, how did you do blah blah blah? I want your contact information. What made you do this? Because I shared a lot of themes that came out of, feedback that we received from students. And it just, I think those types of things, sharing that information to educate other people about the impact that you're having with the work you're doing, and being open to also taking criticism so you can take that criticism and make sure that you continue to evolve as, time evolves and people evolve in these spaces. So again, just kind of leaning in into all of the things that my role entails. So whether that's the professional conferences or just working one-on-one with my grad assistants or my colleagues, to make sure that people are kind of aware of what's happening and what we hope to improve along the way.
Thank you. So important. So important. And I have a feeling I know where we're going with my a next question, and I look forward to hearing more. What contributed to your biggest success thus far, or what has been one of your greatest successes thus far?
What has been one? So I would say, first of all, my own, like, I guess faith has definitely played a huge role in me, like, being confident and following whatever urges or things that I want to pursue. Before I came to Rollins, because I feel like Rollins has really, again, allowed me to expand in terms of what I feel like I do well. And before I came to Rollins, I really struggled with leaving my last role because I moved to Atlanta in 2019. I took a job at Clark Atlanta University. And I still have she's more like a little sister, but a mentee who graduated and is now working in clinical research up in where is she? In Philadelphia. So when I left that job, I was so bummed, like, oh God, am I making a horrible decision? Like, I think I had gotten to a point where I was looking for a leadership role where I could have a bigger impact. And when I left, I was like, it's gonna be okay. Like, you didn't make the wrong decision. But it took a while for me to trust my decisions and trust that risk to, like, just jump out and do something a little bit bigger than what I was doing. And then when I got here and I met the people, and I was like, oh, I think I found my people. Because, and I say that because there's a lot of support and empowerment. I saw a lot of women of color on the leadership teams that I'm a part of and sit under, I guess. And that was really profound for me. I grew up in Columbia, South Carolina, went to a predominantly Black schools before I went to college. And also working in higher ed, I hadn't been in many spaces where I saw people who looked like me. So I think when I came to Atlanta, it was like, okay, I want to be in a space where everybody looks like me. But then there was another opportunity. So again, fast forward, again, the people at Rollins have just been really supportive. And I think I would have never looked at going to present at a conference that was going to be full of thousands of people had I not had that encouragement. And then again, my own development and kind of evaluation of, like, you do these things well, like, you deserve to be here. But yeah, definitely my colleagues and people who've kind of seen my transition and seen me working in higher ed, saw me go to school for counseling. I think even going, like, I used to, when I was finishing my master's, I was hired by the place I completed my internship to continue doing group therapy for pretrial intervention for substance abuse. And I think when I, again, leaving that program and kind of thinking about like all the things that I had done well, like just empowered me to bring some of these experiences into Rollins, into a new role. And then when I was given the opportunity again to do the mentoring program, this is another like, you're doing it. Like these are things that don't come by very easily. Like you actually established a program, you have some support behind you. Continuing this program, they're giving you assistance by allowing you to work with grad assistants and hire grad assistants. So it's just been a really, I think those things have truly contributed to my success. And I would say my big success is just being in this role and stretching out past the academic advisor position. And that for me has been rewarding. And that's not all, again, it's not always the case when you work in certain roles. You're not able to do things that kind of sit outside of the main function of the role. But yeah, my colleagues, the supports that are in place, the encouragement that is in these spaces. And now I think the physical manifestation of this peer mentoring program, which is kind of like a brainchild of me and a grad assistant, would be those things. Those would be the things I would say. Yeah.
Wonderful. And of course, I am sure the listeners are like me and going, tell us more about this peer mentoring
The peer
program.
mentoring program, of course. So March 2020, when I started, this is right before we all sent home. So I was on campus for about 2 weeks, and my colleague was like, well, it looks like we're gonna be home for a week or so. So, hope that's okay. I'm like, well, okay, yeah, it's fine. So that transition took place, and I think we, as a result of some feedback from some students, there was a letter written and they wanted something that allowed them to connect across cohorts. Because typically students in the master's program, you take one set of classes your first year, another set your second year. And they wanted an opportunity first to connect across cohorts, to also provide some community for first generation students. And then again, for underrepresented students, that would be coming into the department. So with this, I connected with the reps that rep the there's a Student Government Association at Rollins, of course. The reps for our department got together with them and kind of asked them to tell me more about what they were looking for. So after that, myself and the first grad assistant at the time was Abrea Lewis, who she graduated in 2021, I believe. Or 20, yeah, 2021. But she was the first grad assistant. She kind of put together how the matches would take place, what we would use in terms of public health interest and other details about people who were interested. And she just sent an email to her peers and asked if they were interested in participating. So we had quite a few, we had a lot, I can't remember the numbers of how many people participated that first year. But it was a large percent of that cohort. And then we sent an email with like some Google forms attached for the incoming class. There was quite a bit of interest, and that formed that first cohort in fall of 2020. And the goal again with the mentoring program is allow for some connection and community for students. And what we did in the fall semester, we kind of focused on them, helping them build rapport and kind of settle into their mentor or mentee role. And then we'd host social events virtually, however we did it, but we did it. And then we also host events in the springtime that are focused on alumni engagement and more professional development. So in that first year, we hosted again all those events virtually that involved people like Matthew McCurdy from Black Health. He came and spoke about his trajectory and his experience. We've done panels with alumni and faculty, speed mentoring and speed networking events. But yeah, that's kind of the gist of the program. Again, I work really, really closely with the grad assistants to develop and implement. And then this program is also, it originally it was supported by our diversity, equity, inclusion working group in the department, which has kind of evolved to our equity and engagement work group in the department. So it's still supported by that. The anti-racism training that we're hosting was actually a again, an event that P2P established in connection with the equity and engagement team. So yeah, that's what P2P is. I think one of the main things that I've seen, just from student feedback, we aren't perfect, of course, in what we're doing. We actually have a student group evaluating the program this year to kind of really hone in on what its impact is and what the, what things we can change or improve. But that's the mentoring program. In a nutshell, I guess, is we've introduced four cohorts. And yeah, it's been like a joy to see that come to life and be a part of it, being present here. Yeah. I think
Indeed.
students are definitely benefiting from it, from the feedback that we've received. So
That's wonderful. And I love that students are benefiting from helping to, like, as you said, develop the program, evolve it, but also be participants in it. And I'm curious because your grad assistants, are they the first or second year master's students, or it's a mix?
His second year, excuse me, second year master's students.
Oh, okay.
They usually start their role in the summer before their second year starts.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. So, recognizing in being in education spaces, we are constantly learning and growing. What would you say your biggest growth opportunities are right now?
Ooh, biggest growth opportunities. Wow. I don't know. I think opportunities where I could make myself a little bit more visible, which would create more work.
I understand.
just to be completely transparent and honest. I think with the workshops and things that I've developed, I do have a business called Girl Let's Talk LLC, where these workshops, one of them is called Self-Awareness Matters. And then I have one called a conversation party. And another one is kind of like a journaling workshop. All of them are tied to wellness, but I see expansion there. Well, I've hosted some of these workshops for students at Rollins. The self-awareness workshop was really, really well attended last year. It actually went over in time, like 20 minutes over, because the discussion was so rich. But all of these are wellness centered kind of educational programs. So I see expansion there, me potentially offering this more for students, and even beyond the Rollins space. I'm also have a collaborative or collective with two colleagues of mine. We're hosting a wellness retreat in May for women. And it's really just workshops and opportunity for people to connect with discussions about things that are a little bit taboo or maybe not spoken of in groups. But I just see myself as a wellness advocate, whether that's speaking about my own experience in terms of therapy and connecting with what it truly means to be well. Relative to who you are and what that looks like for you. But yeah, like I see those things continuing to evolve. I really, really enjoy working with the peer mentoring program. Really, really enjoy the fact that I'm able to offer something that I've created to the institution in this way. So yeah, right now I see myself continuing to stretch out in this role and really leaning into what it means to be a wellness advocate for myself and in this, the space that I serve. But that's what I see for myself. I don't have any specifics. Maybe I'll write a book. I could definitely see myself writing a book.
Oh.
But yeah, I think that's where I'll close it. Yeah.
I That the wellness advocacy and what it will lead to, a book, workshops, all the good things. Love that. Love that. So as you reflect on your work and you know what you do, what would you say you love most about your work and what you do?
I'd start with the people. I think being at the School of Public Health has taught me so much about work that I was doing prior to getting here. I didn't even know it was public health work. And I think the students are definitely one of the things that I really enjoy most about the work. But yeah, the people, the experiences, and kind of like even the place that I sit in terms of like Emory and Rollins and the CDC, like in terms of so many different things. Like you just, it's a hub of information. There's a lot of great work being done. And I think you also receive gratification from being around those like-minded individuals and people who are truly change makers. So yeah, I think it's the people.
Wonderful, wonderful. And so, continuing your reflections, as you reflect on your experiences to date, what would you say your passions are around education currently, or what is your educational philosophy?
Education is essential, whether that's formal or informal. I don't feel like cultures advance or move forward without it, without the evolution of thought and practice. And I'm extremely, like, I'm consciously aware of how education has impacted my life and expanded my worldview, my wellness, again, like being able to connect with what you don't know or what you didn't know is really important. What I think, if I hadn't gone to college, maybe, like, I think again that worldview would be very, very different than what it is now. So I think it's essential, even if not to advance yourself for academic or career purposes, like just being aware and educating yourself about resources that might be available to you. Again, I'm going back to wellness because I think we forget that it's multidimensional. So as I get older, even educating myself about how my body is changing and what, like I think about these things. Like when I went to school for counseling, what we learned about transitions and trajectories and life course and how as you evolve, the way you do things has to evolve as well. We lose things and that grief that you experience, whether that's a physical thing or like a mental thing that you have to lose. So just educating, I think education is essential, whether again, back to whether that's formal or informal, and it impacts our life trajectories and what we can do and how we might be able to do those things. So yeah, it's essential. It's we wouldn't be where we are in the world if we didn't have education. So yeah, I think that's my position. That's how I feel about it.
Thank you. A very important position to have and very informative of the type of work that you do. Thank you. So my last core question for you, I recognize you are more than what you do in your roles. So what are some things you do outside of work to help you maintain joy in life and practice?
So I love, love, love to go to the movies. It's kind of it's like when I say I go to the movies, like since a kid, going to the movies has been my thing. I'll plan movie dates for myself, like matinee. But
Okay.
I love, love going to the movies. I also love being outside, so I like parks and trails. I love the Beltline. I love art and live music. There's a place not too far from where I live where me and my fiance go pretty regularly. Like, we don't care who the band is. Like, we'll just sit at the bar and listen to live music. And there's also some local artists that will go to like live art shows and stuff. I love going to see live art.
Nice.
And I enjoy spending time with my family and friends. I have quite a bit of family here in Georgia, in
Great.
Atlanta. So yeah. Those, yeah. Love live music, art, outdoors. Yeah.
Awesome. I love that. Very whole person.
Yeah. Definitely a whole person. Yeah.
So thank you again for taking your time out to share with our listeners. And before I let you go, any last words of wisdom to share with aspiring educators or education leaders?
Any final words? First, I want to thank you for inviting me to be here today. I hope I've enjoyed this conversation.
I have thoroughly
I hope
enjoyed
that
it
the
too.
listeners have enjoyed it as well. But I would say one thing that I would leave with is I don't think there's any wrong path to take to where you want to be. And sometimes we don't even know what, like sometimes we have no clue what the steps are going to be, but be mindful of again, what makes you feel well. Be mindful of the people around you who are there to support you in that wellness, whether that is your colleagues, your family, or even just passersby. Like, be mindful that community is important. I would not be where I am without that community. But yeah, don't get tripped up by things not going the way you want them to. Think about the positive what ifs that'll come with taking risk. So yeah, that's what I will leave with. No path is the wrong path. It's, aligned with what makes you feel well.
Thank you. I feel like I needed that lesson for today. So I appreciate those closing words. Thank you again for your time, Rachel.
Thank you too. Have a great weekend.